across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Susie Thorpe.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Simon Hall is in the studio. As I said before, his Twitter account says, a lover of words, thoughts and feelings. Best known as the BBC's crime correspondent and the author of TV detective novels. And his latest one, The Editor, has come out in August and it's based around Cambridge. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Pleasure. I'm going to ask you to bring that microphone a little bit further towards you because we want to hear you and
Hello,
not the...
Susie,
yes. Oh, that's good. I'm not sure about that. Well, okay. Well, stop putting me off my show here. It's great to have you here. Now, you've got a lot of history with radio, journalism and everything else. And of course, we're here to talk about your book, The Editor. Now, you've spent a lot of time as a crime correspondent. So I guess this is a natural path for you to write about crime and thriller?
Yes, I think so. And the reason I started writing was a challenge to myself. I was with the BBC for many years, doing stories which were on average 2 minutes in duration, which is a great thing to do, it's a privilege. But nonetheless, I started to wonder if I could tell a longer form story than that. And of course, when you get to a novel, which is 90 or 100,000 words, it was more of a task than I thought it was going to be, and certainly more than putting together a 2 minute story. But that was the progression.
And I always think when you do a crime correspondent, and you are, were you not sort of scared of the stories that you put out? Is this something you want to repeat and do it in a more delicate way?
I think I was touched by the story of many of the victims. I can say these things now because I'm out of the BBC, but I got very, very cross and frustrated with the way the British justice system often treats victims of crime. And I sat in court on many occasions where it seemed to me that the natural order was being completely reversed and the criminals were being treated like royalty and given every possible courtesy and way of getting out of the hideous things they've done, whereas the victims would sometimes be put in the witness box and made to look like liars and cheats and as though they were responsible for the crimes which had been inflicted upon them or their families. And I think a lot of that burst through in my writing because you can't be human and deal with that day in, day out without coming to some fairly savage conclusions about the state of the British justice system sometimes.
That's interesting. Innocent before proven guilty is probably how that was probably treated. But as you say, that's fascinating. And do you still think that's happening now? Do you think that's continuing? Do you not get frustrated when we back into the BBC and write something about it?
I think it is still happening now, and I think it's probably got worse because of the cutbacks we've had over many years. And it's not a personal criticism. I see many lawyers, many, many police officers who I'm still close to and friends with, judges as well, who do their very, very best, but the system seems somewhat stacked against the very concept of justice to me, and that really goes against my grain of fairness and truth and decency.
Now, we've got... you've written a few novels since 2008, all crime novels. This one that we're talking about today, The Editor, how different is it from the previous ones?
It's hugely different. I wrote it, I think, because it marks a big life change for me, moving to Cambridge 2 years ago. And incidentally, if I could just take advantage of your wonderful airwaves and your kind self, just to mention the dedication, it's to Cambridge, City of Intellect, Imagination and Inspiration, for welcoming me so well. I genuinely mean it. It's a wonderful city. I came here knowing just about no one. And I've been taken just as what was a stranger and has become a friend. And people have made me so welcome, whether it's my business work in the university, communications work with some of the fantastic businesses we have. So many of the people in Cambridge owed me nothing, but they gave me their time and their support. And the book, I think, was to mark my change to living here and enjoying myself very much and feeling very welcome. And so I think that was a lot of what lay behind it, but there was more as well, as you know from having read it.
Just give us a flavour of the book. I mean, obviously we want to read it and we want to get to know it, but in the reviews I was saying earlier, it's been sort of described as quirky. You can't categorise it. It's mystical. Well, of course it's going to be mystical. It's a crime thriller. But are these words that you're really pleased to hear about the book?
They very much are. Yeah, I set out to do something different. It's not a straightforward crime mystery, although there is a crime at the heart of it. It's really about the journey of the four main characters. And they're brought together because of a strange advert that appears in the local paper. And again, I'll just quote you the very opening of the book, which which is the advert itself, and it says simply, "Have you lost hope in life? Wondering what's the use of going on? Struggling to see the point in living? Would you like to restore your sense of hope?" And then it goes on from there, the crowd that assembles from there. First of all, the question, will anyone come? And that is answered in a surprising way. And then the four who go ahead to rediscover their hope in life, they're led by the somewhat mysterious, occasionally sinister, but what is he really? Their guide, a man who calls himself only Ed. And he has discovered through the trauma of his life and some of the terrible things he's seen and been part of, how terrible it is to lose that hope for tomorrow, but also the determination, that wonderful human spirit, never, ever to give up on life. And over years, he finds his way back to the sunshine, to the light, to hope again. And his mission from that moment on is to spread that understanding. And he has a simple secret to how to rediscover hope in life. And that's fundamentally what the book is about.
Right, excellent. And of course, the human spirit and the hope, as you just said, has been brought on by the way you've been welcomed in Cambridge as well.
Very much so. It's been a wonderful experience. It really has.
Yeah.
I came here and, frankly, I was nervous. It was a big, big life change. Leaving the BBC, which was a very comfortable place to be, place I knew well and looked after me well, but I also fundamentally believe in life offering so many opportunities, and you should do your very best to explore as much of this wonderful playground of life as you possibly can. And I thought I'd done plenty of time on the swings of the BBC, so I thought I'd have a go at the roundabout of Cambridge, and it's whizzing me around at speed and I'm enjoying it.
We'll go back to your career, because that sounds really interesting, but I just want to talk about the book a bit more. The book itself, the ideas that you have in the book, where do you get your ideas from? Is that from, obviously, research? We all have to do research for anything. But do you wake up in the morning and think, yeah, I've got it, that's what I want to do? Or does it, when you're doing the washing up?
That does happen sometimes. But ideas will come upon you when they decide to, and you cannot make them come to you. I have realised quite early in life that sitting down and furiously thinking, trying to find inspiration, and it'll just sit there on the corner of my eye and say, I'm not playing, I'm not coming. And then you have to find ways of dealing with that. So my ways of dealing with it, go out for a run or go for a walk around the river, get some air in my lungs, go to the Botanic Garden, do anything which will just get me away from this nagging inability to move on with ideas and progress with the book. And generally, inspiration will then take offence and come back. So that's the way I manage it. And they can come any time. And I am absolutely offended in life by losing ideas, because ideas are at the heart of everything we do, whether it's a book like this, whether it's wonderful music, whether it's the foundation of a business, whether it's architecture, whether it's art, whatever. Everything starts with the idea. So I never lose ideas. So I always carry my little notebook with me and always jot down ideas when they strike. And they can strike at the most ridiculous of times.
And to have ideas and to not be offended, do you find it's really important as a person and as a writer to be friendly, communicative and always network? Or do you think that's something that...
I think it's a human thing as well. I mean, the drivers of my life, I think, are to do the best I can with the gifts I've been given. Like yourself, I'm lucky to have been given a few gifts. I'm sure as hell not going to let them waste. I think it's a moral obligation to do the best you can in life. And at this stage in life, for me, when I've learned a few things from the BBC about communications and how to get your message across, and from my writing as well, it feels like the perfect place to be, in this wonderful city full of so much knowledge and intellect and passion and power, to actually hand on the few skills that I've learnt in life to the next generation so they can look after the planet for us and make it a better place.
Now, we'll go back to your career, because, as you said, 2 years ago you left the BBC, but obviously still in that zone and doing lots of interesting stuff. But how did it all begin for you, Simon?
The writing or the BBC?
Well, I suppose a bit of both. No, let's go with the BBC.
The BBC was, annoyingly for those people who spend many years trying to get into the corporation and into news and journalism and TV, it was a bit of an accident. I went to university to read natural sciences because I wanted to be a teacher, because I'd been heavily influenced at school by two absolutely wonderful teachers, Jerry Lewis and Nigel Waugh, chemistry and maths master, who, if you don't mind me sharing an anecdote with you.
Yeah, go for
when
it.
I was 14, I was a tearaway kid. I was really bad at school. I was being suspended, excluded, getting into fights, being cheeky, just being a really unpleasant little kid. And I was walking down the corridor one day in my school, which was a state comprehensive in Sussex, and Jerry and Nigel jumped out of a classroom, grabbed me, pulled me into the door, locked the door behind us, drew the curtains, and I thought I was going to get beaten up because this was the mid-1980s, perfectly possible in those times. And actually what they did was they sat me down and gave me a real grilling. It only took 10 minutes, but they said I was stupid because I had potential, I had talents, I had brains, I had wit. People looked to me, I could be a leader, I could be so many things in life, or I could screw it all up and go the wrong way. And I was so taken by that intervention that they planned and made that I did turn life around from there. And I went on to university and I did natural sciences because I wanted to teach. I wanted to teach math, physics and chemistry to A-level standard. So that was the reason. But being the shallow creature that I am, I was then beguiled at university by the radio station because I've always loved music, absolute passion for music. I'm quite fond of the sound of my own voice, as you might have noticed. Seemed to have the right assets to become a DJ, so I became a DJ. Really enjoyed that. Quickly realised there was more money, late nights, drinking and girls involved in that than there was in teaching. And therefore went from there into doing nightclub work and radio work after university. Got a little bored with that, so went into radio news, was taken on by the BBC, who turned me into a TV reporter and correspondent. So it was a bit of an accident, really, which is somewhat embarrassing.
So DJ to correspondent, I mean, that'd been quite different in some ways.
It's a huge difference.
Just
yeah.
a bit.
Yeah, and when the BBC said they wanted to employ me, I initially thought they got the wrong person. And then when they put me in radio, I thought, well, that makes sense. I know a bit about radio. And they said, no, we want you to go into television. I said, what, television? Point a camera at me. And you've been there. It's terrifying. Mm. You know, this cold, hard eye looks at you, and it's got no emotion, and it just gawps at you and think, oh, I feel really self-conscious on this thing. But after a fair bit of training and some experience, I was reasonable at television, so they set me out in the world as a news correspondent. But I tell you what, the harmonising feature that runs through all this, it's storytelling. Whether it's a brief story, like telling about Nigel and Jerry who ambushed me and changed my life, whether it's 100,000 words, like in The Editor, whether it's a story you tell your friends over a coffee, hey, you wouldn't believe what happened to me today. Stories, and they're a harmonising influence in life. They're such beautiful things, whether short, long, films, books, music, whatever. It's all about telling stories, and I think people don't always appreciate the power and the beauty of stories, and I'm so glad to be in that world.
Well, radio is all about stories, isn't it? And the insignificant stories, too, that actually you think is not going to be interesting, but it's going to be interesting to others. Going back to the book, the other impression I get from the book is it's got quite a strong female character in it. You're laughing.
Olivia. Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because a couple of my friends have said, is she your fantasy woman? No, I deny that entirely.
Well, you have to, don't you? You have to say that. But come on, just give us a bit. Is this true? Do you find that this is quite a strong character for you? Was this a purposeful moment, or did it sort of flow with it and it got to be like that?
Very deliberate in that a young woman who has so much talent, she doesn't know what to do with it, and that frustrates her. And she's just brilliant to work with because, I say work with, you know, this is the weird thing about writers.
Yeah,
I can see the four of them sitting there in the corner of the studio watching me. And it's perfectly common if I've stuck on something to have a chat with them, say, Ed, what do you think about this? I mean, what would you lot do in this situation? And he'll talk to me. And so will Olivia. They'll talk. Yeah, it was a deliberate decision. I wanted four very diverse characters, and you've got them. They all feel hopeless. Olivia, because she's just too clever for the world, and she hasn't worked out the human bit. She's a computer scientist. She's here at Cambridge. She's a PhD. You know, unimaginably clever. But the human side is what she doesn't get. And then there's Florence, who's another very strong character, who's just one of those poor people who life always seems to kick. Whatever she tries to do, it doesn't work for her. And she's desperate to find a way back. And then there's Ed, who's been through his trauma. He's the leader of the gang. And Mitch, who was a crime scene investigator, seen terrible things, and also wants to find his sense of hope after all the trauma he's suffered. But no, it's absolutely true. I will confess, as it's you, I am quite in love with Olivia. It's true.
Yeah, I've got my hands up in cool. Thank God for that. And the book itself, the way it moves around Cambridge, were there any particular parts of Cambridge that really come out at you in the book that you felt that, yeah, I've really... So please, I got that in.
What I didn't want to do was do what I suspect many people would expect me to do, which is base it around the university. And of course, that's so important for Cambridge. It's so fundamental. It's history. It's wonderful. Don't get me wrong. I have enormous admiration, respect, and enjoy working with the university. But there are other parts to Cambridge as well. And this was designed to be a more ordinary side of Cambridge life. So it's based around the Eagle Labs out there in Chesterton. I did actually have to go and see the manager of the Eagle Labs because the manager is a character in this book, and he's a bit of a wally, to be frank, and I really like the manager of the Eagle Lab, so I had to say, hey, it's not based on you, honest. Please let me come back. And he took it in such good heart that he still has me in to do talks and even promoted it in the newsletter. So that's just an insight to how lovely Cambridge people can be. So it's the other, it's kind of the other side of life. They're ordinary people. The parts that I particularly like, I love the area around the river. Mitch, who lives on a barge, is there on the river on Jesus Green, Midsummer Common. He loves it there because it brings him tranquility, which he's
lost. Is that based on a character, that person you know as well?
Everybody is.
Okay.
Everybody is. I should have warned you, in fairness, you know, full declaration, to be honest with you from the start, Susie, I steal bits of people everywhere.
Oh, love
that's
it.
That's partly why the notebook is here. So beware.
Yes.
Because you could easily become part of or a whole character in my next novel. If I need a scintillatingly talented, charming, beautiful radio host.
Yikes.
Look no further.
Oh, you're so cool. You are a gentleman. I love it. Simon, it's been great talking today. The future of your book looks very, very bright indeed. You've had some really fantastic reviews. Obviously, it came out in August. Are you planning your next one?
Yes, I am planning my next one. There's a funny thing when you've written a book, you wait to see how it goes as a writer, but it's almost impossible to write these things without falling in love with the characters, and I do love them, and they are with me every day, and I'm really proud to say in the last couple of weeks, they've started to talk to me about what their next adventure will be. So we've started writing it down, and yeah, I am hopeful they will come back, because I don't think their story is finished yet.
Oh, it's, I love talking to writers, and you just bring alive the whole thing. Thank you, Simon, very much indeed. Simon Hall, that is the latest book, and it's called The Editor, based in Cambridge. It's a crime thriller. He is the BBC ex-correspondent, crime correspondent, which I have to say, with many, many other things to talk about too. I think we might have to get you back in again, Simon. There's a lot more of things we need to talk about. Thank you so much indeed.
Thank you.